today. Mo info on the DEA. As Atalanta take the top four at a canter, it's a special on the Bergamo Kings. Their incredible season and their colourful history, from Merthyr Tydfil to Donny hiding in his garage to Papu Gomez. Also, welcome back, Massimo Cellino. We've missed you. Turin Derby and more.
Ancora Gomez davanti al portiere, la mette in mezzo, non è finita Castagne in rete, Castagne, Atalanta in vantaggio all'Olimpico.
Happy Atalanta fans, 4,000 of them, Sunday night at the Zingonia training ground to welcome Atalanta back from their latest exploits, Sunday's 3-1 win away at Lazio at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome, a victory which sets the Queen of the Provinces up for fourth or maybe even third place, and a great warm-up for the Italian Cup final. High time for an Atalanta special. Joining us today, Gabriele Marcotti and James Horncastle, who is just back from Bergamo himself. James, what's the mood like?
Well, I was there before the Lazio game, James, and I visited the training ground. And it felt like quite a big week for Atalanta anyway, because they were announcing naming rights for the stadium, which they are renovating. Work is about to start on that. For their last home game against Udinese, you saw fans actually taking bits down from the Cool of the Nord. And that's going to be formally dismantled from today, I think.
More home games, right?
No more home games, and they hope to have it back ready in time for mid-September, that part of the stadium.
Yeah, so they're doing one side per year, basically, and getting the whole thing done.
A little bit like Udinese did with the Dacia Arena.
Nice.
And there are some parallels between this three-year spell, I suppose, of success that Atalanta had in the 3 years that Udinese did with Guidolin, Toto Di Natale, and the generation there.
Interesting.
Which we'll get to later. Successful once your stadium is finished, so they can fully exploit it commercially.
Gab, it was a great result on Sunday, but they've been doing this all season against Inter, against Juve, the four goals in a quarter of an hour against Bologna. They've been the story of the season.
They certainly have, and I was waiting for them to regress to the mean, because the whole thing is you take a ton of shots, you have sort of this front three of Ilicic, Gomez, and Zapata, but you know, Gomez is the only one who I think has actually been consistently good over his career to that point. Ilicic, of course, is, you know, human highlight reel. And, you know, Zapata's just a guy whose last name means shoe in Spanish, right? So, but this season, they've just been on fire. The mechanisms behind them, the wingbacks, the back threes working, it's all worked out for them. And I heard a stat. I suggest I saw it on Sky Italia. Stat was actually slightly wrong. We all know they're the highest scoring team in Italy, even more than that other team that wins everything and has Cristiano Ronaldo up front. But nobody in Europe's big five leagues has scored more goals away from home than Atalanta. Although that comes a little asterisk, which doesn't lessen the story, as Hoffenheim have scored as many goals in one fewer away game. But still, that is just unbelievable.
We'll explore some of the reasons why La Dea are having such a remarkable season, such a remarkable series of campaigns, and what it might be like to see them in the Champions League next season. First, before any of that, let's get a bit of context. Yeah, that's the Arapa Coi Ganti, Pierluigi Golini in arte glorious. Atalanta are, of course, based in Bergamo, 30 miles from Milan, or in Milan if you're Ryanair, and a city very much in two parts. Their proximity to the great metropolis that is Milan, one of the reasons why perhaps they don't measure up with the big clubs in trophy terms. They've been more famous over the years for other reasons, principally their academy, no?
Yeah, and just to contextualize a little bit of what the city of Bergamo, because they're so close to Milan, and that whole area of Lombardia, you know, right down there's a highway that goes from Milan all the way to Venice and obviously hits Bergamo and Brescia or whatever. They're self-conscious of the fact that the big city is down the road. Bergamo is one of the wealthiest cities in Italy. Bergamo, as you said, is divided in two parts. There's Bergamo Alta, which is effectively on top of a mountain. What's amazing,
Bergamo di Sura, would that be right?
Is that what they call it?
I believe so. Yeah, Bergamo di Sura and Bergamo di Sotto.
Bergamo is one of the prettiest cities in Italy. And I remember when I went there for the first time, I'm like, why didn't I know about this? Why didn't anybody come visit, you know? And the reason is they like it that way. They don't want outsiders coming into their little world. There's all the valleys which go north from there, where you have these very successful, very, very wealthy sort of mountain folk, and they don't like mixing with the people downstairs. And the people they really don't like, this is what we've talked about before, it's one of the wildest rivalries in Serie A is with Brescia. Brescia Industrial Center, it's only, maybe 20 minutes away down the motorway. Bergamo will boast about the fact that they have a bigger airport. Brescia will boast about the fact, but we have two motorway exits and you just have one. And there's this incredible rivalry, and it goes right down to, in football terms, you touched upon it, the academy, how it's not cool when Atalanta, who have one of the best academies in all Europe, spend a ton of money on it. It's not cool when they go on Brescia's patch to go and get players, but they often do. And in fact, what Atalanta often do is they go and they scout in the greater Milan area. And it's remarkable that they've produced so much talent when you consider that, they have Brescia down the road and they've got two super clubs like Milan and Inter, a half hour away. Plus, of course, Monza in not quite the same thing, but there are a number in Como. There's a number of professional clubs around there. And yet year after year, they do this. And we should probably spend a word on the guy who was sort of the legendary academy director, Mino Favini, who passed away last week.
Mm. And his funeral, I think, was when you were still there, no, James?
Yeah, but it wasn't in Bergamo. And I think there were not only people who'd been at the club over the course of his 25 years there, like Beppe Marotta, for example, who'd spent a couple of years, did very well at Atalanta Gap. I know you're going to bring that up. And
he basically blew 10 years worth of budgets on signing two players for Milan. Milan was run by his friend Adriano Galliani, of course, the legendary Luca Saudati and Gianni Comandini.
But I found it quite interesting looking at some of the pictures in the local papers as to who were the pallbearers at the funeral. And one of them was Claudio Galimberti. Il Boccia, the capoutra of the Curva Pisani.
One of the most kind of significant nationally leaders of the ultra movement, no?
Yeah, without doubt. And there have been a series of protest marches in Bergamo over the last few weeks. I think attempting to get Galimberti's Daspo, he's got a series of them. These are banning orders, essentially. I think he's got, like when people are put away and they've got so many life sentences, it's like thousands of years. I think he's got 25 years of banning orders.
Brilliant.
And this is, I think, what we're going to get to, James, which is going to put this club into context. I think you probably have to say that this three-year stretch that Atalanta are on at the moment ranks, if not surpasses, what they did in the late 80s.
Well, yeah, until, say, the arrival of Percassi and then Gasparini in 2016 as manager, Atalanta famous for such things as having that tank crushing cars at their pre-season
day. And the thing is, what was spray-painted onto these cars, one had Brescia spray-painted on it, and the other was Roma, who they also have
a
big
really
rivalry.
Like Roma,
in fact, the one thing that Bresciani and Bergamaschi agree on is the fact that Roma are the... And equally, in fact, it's true. I do recall Lazio and Roma fans uniting to take on was it the Bresciani or the... But
it's amazing how you have this kind of wonderful synthesis, if you like, of Carlo Mazzone, Romanista doc, sort of being in charge of the Brescia side in that incredible game against Atalanta. We touched upon it in last week's episode when we were talking about Malisani going under the curva and Mazzone, the old man, having to be held back, but nobody could hold him back from basically going to celebrate in the faces of the Bergamaschi.
Sending all newborn children in the area an Atalanta strip, so to get them into the faith.
Thing. Yeah. They send them a strip, and then they send them kind of a document that the parents are invited to sign, which is that they will basically put every effort forward to raise their child, you know, assuming that the guy is from Bergamo and not some interloper who was just born there.
Oh, really? So do they only send it to newborn of the right kind of genetic stirpe?
No, it's anybody born there. Okay, but obviously, right. if you're a Juventus fan and you come from a long line of Juve fans, they're not going to make you say, like, oh, you've got to raise your son as an Atalanta fan. But anybody who either has no interest in football or is lukewarm, they say, like, we're welcoming you into our family and we invite you to make this oath. And it's quite a significant oath to those of us who are papists because when you get married, you also make an oath to raise your children in the Catholic Church. You make a pledge to raise your children as Catholics, therefore maintaining the papist legacy. So it is sort of the same thing that Atalanta are doing. Atalanta is also one of the most Catholic cities in Italy. So it's very much in keeping with that. It's keeping with the idea that you need to. You mentioned the guy before, Galimberti, Il Boccia, who, by the way, he's like a feared ultras leader. He's also, you know, he's a landscape designer. That's his day job. This is a very eloquent speech that's where he talks about how if I see a little kid walking through town and I hear his accent that he's one of us and he's wearing a shirt or he's wearing colors of another team,
I'm going to drive a tank over him.
No. He's like, I'm not going to go and beat him up, but I'm going to have a word with his parents,
right?
Because I think he owes the city an explanation.
That's not remotely threatening. That's great.
No, but he does have a point. Like, honestly, what is the world coming to where everybody has to be a Manchester United or a Juve fan? I think their sense of local identity, what you mentioned before, yeah. You keep bringing up the tank. For the avoidance of doubt here, this isn't some loon stealing a tank and running over cars.
No, we have mentioned summer, this before, Galaxy,
yes,
but yeah.
Every summer, they have La Festa della Dea, the Feast of the goddess being Atalanta, where all the players are invited and they do silly things. And one year, one guy who likes to collect World War II relics, nothing wrong with that, sometimes dresses in uniform too, he happened to have a spare tank. And he loaned it to them, and they put a bunch of junk cars.
Right.
And they rode the tank. And people got so bent out of shape.
Glenn Peter Stromberg on it as well. He was riding it as it went over. He was obviously one of the
Scandinavian god.
The Scandinavian.
Right. Now you want to talk about that. So we'll get onto that. Because for many years, they were a yo-yo side. They'd come up to Serie A, but then get relegated. Then they'd come straight back up again. In fact, I think prior to Gasperini's arrival, they only managed to finish in the top half of Serie A once in the kind of decade that preceded that. They've only once picked up a trophy. That was the Coppa Italia in 1963. Of course, they're now one game away from doubling that tally. They did, though, set a record in 1988. Why, James?
Is that because they reached the semi-finals of the Cup Winners' Cup despite being in the second division at the time?
Exactly, yeah. They beat, along the way, Sporting Lisbon and Merthyr Tydfil. But only after Merthyr Tydfil had beaten them. It was a 2-1 victory for the Welsh side.
Sir Rogers. È proprio Rogers, poi la palla deviata finisce in porta. Il 35esimo minuto e l'Atalanta è in svantaggio sul tiro di Rogers.
Kevin Rogers, who would go on to play for Villa and Birmingham. Scoring 34 minutes in. Merthyr Tydfil's side composed of steelworkers, electricians and road workers. The Atalanta lineup included Glenn Stromberg, Carmine Gentile, and a midfielder by the name of Cesare Prandelli. Do you know who the manager was?
Mondonico.
It was Mondonico. They lost out, sadly, to the winners Mechelen of Belgium in the semi-final. Since the 90s, discreet success, but also a level of notoriety that really is owed to the 2010-2011 season, James.
Yes, and the captain at the time, Cristiano Doni. Now, Doni was a legend, I would say, at Atalanta. I think he's still their all-time top scorer.
He is.
Fourth all-time in terms of appearances. And whenever they went down, on the occasions he didn't jump ship to go and play for Sampdoria and Mallorca, he would come and basically get them back up again.
We should provide a
little
bit
of
context on Doni as well. So first of all, Donny kind of looked odd because he had
looks like Nicola Berti. I'd forgotten how much he looks like Nicola
Berti. He looks like fat, retired Nicola Berti. I mean, he wasn't fat, but he just has that face that makes him look fat.
Right. He came from pressure as well.
Well, this is the thing about him, right? Mm. If you talk to the more religious or devout of the Atalanta fan, they will point out that we should have seen it coming, that there was a snake between us. Because not only did Doni come from Brescia, I believe he might have even come through the ranks there, but he certainly played at Brescia for a number of years, but he was born in Rome as well. And deceptively, he left when he was very young, so he never had that Roman accent. So I think he fooled a lot of people with his with his providence. And let's not forget, Doni was also in the Italy side.
In 2002.
Yeah.
Which is weirdly like 9 years earlier.
Yeah.
But
Before, in 2000, he was already playing for Atalanta.
I mean, what we should say is that he scored a hell of a lot of goals from midfield.
Yeah.
You know, he would regularly get into double figures. The Lampard.
No, very much so. He was basically a Nicola Berti looking Lampard-esque deep line midfielder with an incredible talent for scoring goals, which earned him 7 caps with the Azzurri, which is, again, an Atalanta record. But great though he was out of midfield, in 2011, word breaks of a betting scandal in Italian football. I know, right? All about basically, supposedly, betting syndicates that have fixed a wide range of second division and various lower league games. Do you remember how it all begins?
Okay, so I remember some of this, and please feel free and add details. Basically, this guy had a girlfriend, and he had expensive tastes, but he was a third division goalkeeper. And he developed a lot of debt. And then some friends said, hey, look, you play in goal for Cremonese. Cremonese are dominating the league that year. Why don't you help us out? Concede a couple goals there, a couple wins turn into draws. Because, you know, you could make a lot of money since Cremonese were generally heavy favorites all the time by basically laying Cremonese on the Asian markets. So he's like, okay. So he basically starts throwing in goals. And you can go on YouTube and you can see some of this. However, Cremonese are so good that in spite of this, he keeps winning. So he's like, oh, Christ, how am I going to get out of this? Because, you know, like, these people keep giving me money to throw the games, and I can't throw the games. I don't know, should I involve my teammates or whatever else? So then what he decides to do is he effectively gets these sleeping pills. Mm-hmm. Which were prescription, too. I think, didn't he steal them or something? Or some weird thing.
But he administers them to his teammates.
He spikes their drinks at halftime. Mm. No, before a match.
Right.
He spikes. But I think, as it turned out, he spiked everybody's drinks.
Yeah. Right.
But only a couple of them actually drank pre-match. And then afterwards, they started feeling sick. And the funny thing is, didn't they still win that game?
I'm not sure.
Even with people throwing up.
This is the reason that it all comes to light, because one of them has a car crash on the way home and says to the police, when they come to pick him up, I don't know what's wrong with me, I don't feel right. They test him, they then test the rest of the team, and they discover that they've all had these pharmaceuticals administered to them, and then it all begins to come out.
So Baloni pretended that he had all these connections in football, and what he'd do is he'd kind of be like, oh yeah, I think this game's going to end in a draw. So then he would take money from these match fixtures to say, look, I arranged that draw. I'm going to arrange this draw, right? And then went in a draw, and then he pretended he had all these connections, and he knew all these people, but he didn't really. And one of the things that he did, when he impersonated somebody, he's like, yeah, he's going to call you. Well, I forget who it was.
And they do like a fake Skype kind of thing.
Yeah, he sets up a fake Skype account, and he's like, yeah, like, well, they're like, give us your mobile. Like, no, I'll Skype you, right? And it says, like, you know, whatever the guy's name is, you know, Mario Rossi or whatever. And this guy calls up, and because they have the same accent, because they're both from Rome, they're suspicious, and they're like, Baloni, say, dude, it's you, isn't it? He's like, no, we just have the same accent because we're both from Rome. So then they want to Skype video him, and he puts on this ridiculous disguise where he appears, but he's got it's like summer, and it's not summer, but it's sunny, and he's on his balcony, and he has this big scarf on, these big like women's sunglasses, and a hat. So they're still like, well, we can't see if it's you. And then he realizes, like, I'm basically full of it. He's like, what? I can't hear you. And he hangs up. Just complete, like, this is a seriously disturbed person. And, you know, as ever, you're not going to know how many people he conned or tried to con.
The player he was impersonating was?
Daniele Cordia.
But however true his stories were, by pulling on that thread, the authorities began to unravel a network of influence designed to arrange fixtures that included in its web the likes of Beppe Signori, Mauro Bressan, Stefano Bettarini, and the biggest active player who gets caught up is the Atalanta captain, Cristiano Doni. Now, Doni had actually had issues with match fixing before. So this was a cup game with Pistoiese, which actually involved Max Allegri, who was, what was he, Pistoiese?
I think it was towards the end of his career. He was still playing. He was with Pistoiese.
Anyway, as you say, he was cleared. And so Doni, do you remember, he used to go around, after he scored one of his many goals, he would put his hand under his chin and lift up his head as if to say, my head is high.
My head held high, yeah.
My head held high. Not so much, though, when on the 19th of December 2011, the Carabinieri came for him.
And this is extraordinary. There's a raid of his house. 16 Carabinieri come in, and he thought he was being burgled. And you see, because this is great, whenever you see there's like a raid on, I don't know, kind of a mob meeting of the 'Ndrangheta or the Camorra, something like that, the Carabinieri film it all. And so you see, basically, there's a guy with a camera outside the front door of Doni's house, and they lead him out, and you can just see in the background the family Christmas tree just twinkling.
Doni, who apparently had been hiding once he realized it was Carabinieri.
And his name, of course, means gifts in Italian, which also adds a whole other layer.
The story famously, anyway, that he'd run to his garage and was hiding behind the front of his car, but they still found him anyway.
And we also should say that someone implicated in that scandal in a very damaging way plays for Atalanta at this moment in time.
Masiello. Doni gets a 5-year ban, later reduced to 3.5 seasons from football, which seems pretty mild. He gets arrested, spends a significant amount of time inside. Atalanta get docked 6 points for the following season, their first in Serie A. And the reaction of people in town was pretty severe.
Yeah, they disowned him completely. And yeah, in much the same way that Gab has explained earlier, yeah, brought up all these other, let's say, coincidences.
Right. Doni now, as you say, is still living in Bergamo.
He does have a bar in Mallorca, though, if you want to go there.
Okay. Yeah. Where he briefly played, as you mentioned. He says now that he was the scapegoat, that he basically made a large sacrifice as captain, taking the blame so that Atalanta would get off easy. Had he not said, yes, it's me, had he admitted that everybody else, this is, again, Cristiano Doni's version, that everybody else was involved, they would have gone down to Liga Pro. But instead, he carried the can. And this is a story that you hear, that basically he received money. Some people say that he was basically paid off just to be the fall guy.
Well, his contract was honoured.
There you go. Remarkable business. Happier times now. That's the important thing. Happier times now for Atalanta, making headlines for the right reasons, especially since the arrival of Gasperini in 2016.
But before Gasperini's not very pleasant, can we give one other big shout? We touched upon Atalanta's youth academy. The sheer volume of players that they produce. Like, if you want to talk superstars, I guess Donadoni is probably the biggest player. You know,
Gaetano Scirea
before him. You know, you're not going to necessarily reel off 5 or 6.
Pazzini, Tacchinardi, Montolivo.
Well, yeah. That's what I mean.
Cabrini.
This is the other thing. They also were able to sign players and develop them. Not just Montero, but, for example, Bobo Vieri, who came through at Torino. Pippo Inzaghi as well, who replaced Vieri when he left. They had a very good record.
17 national titles, just to say. 17 national titles between 91 and 2014. It's incredible.
They also had one season, I want to say maybe around the turn of the millennium, where people who came from their youth academy and actually went on to have long, proper, top-flight careers. Fabio Rustico, who later ran for mayor of Bergamo. Of course, the legendary Domenico Morfeo. Luciano Zauri, who was capped for Italy, went on to Lazio, played there for many years. Stefano Lorenzi was a really mean defender, then suffered a bad injury. Ivan Pelizzoli, also capped for Italy, never turned out to be as good as we thought he would be, but, you know, got a big move to Rome. Cristian Zanoni and his brother Damiano, who I believe might have both been capped as well. Mm-hmm. Massimo Donati, who of course later went to Celtic, of course. And was like the bright young thing in midfield. Gianpaolo Bellini, who I think was one of the most underrated defenders in a long time. Rolando Bianchi couldn't play a lick, but was very tall and the target man. Oh, yeah, and Pinardi, who was the guy who was supposed to be... Pinardi was supposed to be their biggest talent since Morfeo, and then because he's a bit mad, he never quite made it. But if you have one guy a year who can play top-flight football, maybe not at your club, but somewhere else, then you've been successful. they would regularly have 3, 4, 5, 6. They had Fabio Rustico. They had the other guy who went to Rome, the winger. I mean, it's pretty. You should check out Atalanta, like 2001, 2002. It's unreal. And they also had, they had a guy named Sam Dalabona, who then went to Chelsea together with
Luca Percassi.
Luca Percassi, who is the son of the current owner.
Right, who you met up with this week.
Yeah, I mean, he's the chief executive. He runs the club now.
Has he shaved his head yet? Because I remember he came over, he was like 19 and like he was balding.
Yeah, so he was at Chelsea for 3 years. But I think this is the other thing that gets lost about Atalanta, that this is very much a kind of family affair. And the Percassi family are from just outside of Bergamo. And his father, Antonio, used to play for them, but kind of quit, walked away from football aged 24, 25. And has been very successful in business in terms of basically finding and buying retail space and then renting it and selling it to very high profile global brands across, you know, across Italy. So for example, the first, this is probably, again, not going to paint him in a great light, but the first Starbucks that came to Italy, what, just last year, was kind of a Percassi thing, a Percassi deal.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of knowing who you are and what that club is and should be, its identity, the Percassis are exactly the right people to be running that club.
Better latte than never. Very clear. Anyway, all right, well, let's talk about then the current Atalanta and why it's the most special part of this story after this. Under Gasperini, into the UEFA Cup they went, Europa League a few seasons ago, but Everton fans remember that, losing 8-1 to La Dea on aggregate. This time around, they've had some
Wayne Rooney's performance in that game.
Unsworth didn't get the job on a permanent basis.
This time around, they have just put together an incredible, I mean, they started brilliantly, a 4-0 win over Frosinone on opening day, but the way that they've sustained it right through the campaign has been a real surprise. And this Sunday, going down to the Stadio Olimpico in Rome, in what is a dress rehearsal for the Coppa Italia final, when they'll be at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome playing Lazio and going a goal behind,
which is what they
Lazio
do. They've done that, I think, 11 times this season. They've recovered more points from losing positions than any other team. And Gasperini was joking afterwards, saying it's clearly a tactic that they work on.
But they come back to win 3-1 for their fourth straight victory. What an incredible season. Mentioned back at the top, things like their 4-1 win over Inter, the 3-0 win in the cup over Juve.
Zapata si gira, destro! Il raddoppio atalantino pazzesco! Due Zapata!
And the remarkable thing is that this is despite the steady turnover of players.
Yeah, I mean, they finished fourth 3 years ago, back when fourth wouldn't get you into the Champions League. And they had a lot of players who Gasperini basically put faith in because they lost four of their first five games. And he just said, screw it, I'm going to play the kids. We've got a really good generation coming through. And already by January, they were getting picked off. Gagliardini went to Inter for 28 million. They then lost Kessi, Conti. I think of the team that finished fourth that year, there are only three still left. And that is Toloi, Masiello, and Papu Gomez. The turnover in that time, I mean, this is practically a completely different team. Because the one that got them into the Europa League had Berisha in goal, Caldara, who would go to Juve and then is now at Milan, Conti, who, like him, his knees keep blowing out, Spinazzola, who's obviously done very well for Juve in the second half of this season, Kessi, Yasmin Kurtic, Andrea Petagna, both of whom are now at Spal, and Gagliardini. And so there is this idea that Atalanta have a team that is essentially furnished by their academy. That's not the case with this team.
That's what makes it so different.
And that's what makes it so different. And I think what they've tried to do in order to make this team sustainable is they obviously can't rely on their academy to supply young players, good young players every year, but they brought in the guy who would find good players for Chievo and Chievo up over the years, Giovanni Sartori, Gab's rolling his eyes, who has been able to supplement this and maybe keep it going a little bit longer.
What I've been told is that the next generation, academy-wise, the 2002s, 2003s, are really good and are on a par with the ones from a decade ago.
They're top of the league in the under-19s at the moment by quite some distance as well. Mm. So there's been quite a lot of hype about Hamid Traore, who is at Empoli and he's going to Fiorentina. His brother plays for Atalanta. He's a winger and they're very big on him being a very, someone who can break into the first team.
Okay, well, now that they're set for Champions League, fourth place, and possibly even third, because they're now only 1 point behind Inter with 3 games to go. Will they keep hold of the squad that they've got? Not just the young players coming through, but the likes of Hatibur, Duvan Zapata.
So this, we talked about this, Ilicic, right?
And we disagree with
you. You think that Gosens and Giroud have a market?
Well, I think I know that Gosens, Freuler, Hatibur, they have a market.
Okay.
And I know that, well, obviously Zapata does. And I think that's the thing. I think if you look at the age of Zapata, he's 28. This would be his last opportunity to get what is a quote-unquote big move to a big club. And Atalanta could quite easily flip him because I think overall it's 12 million for a 2-year loan, 14 million to make that permanent. I've been told that he's available for around 40, 50 million in the summer. And they obviously look for an auction.
22 goals he's scored so far this season. He's now only 2 off the Atalanta season record, which is held by
Pippo Inzaghi.
But the amazing thing about Zapata, again, is that he's been around this league for a lot. This is his third club in 3 years. And up until this season, he'd only scored 11 goals. That was his best single season. And this year, he didn't score until November. And he scored 22 goals. And Gab brought it up earlier, that stat about the number of away goals Atalanta have scored. He scored, I think, 16 of his 22 goals have been away from home.
Wow.
16.
If we're going to pull players out beyond Zapata to talk about, Ilicic is one who, I think...
Ilicicone.
There you go.
Human highlight reel.
And Papu Gomez or Golini, do you want to talk about...
I mean, Papu Gomez is sort of like the little angry South American
the
guy who's skillful and he runs around and works hard. But Gasperini has a rep in Italy of working his players extremely hard. So I always thought, man, where does Ilicic fit in this? Because this guy's just so different. He's in his own world. He does things, you know, that others can only dream of. I'm just going to put up. I'm just going to tell my players, unless you can play like Ilicic, then... You can't do what Ilicic does in training. Right. You actually work.
When you talk about him doing things that other people can only dream of, and indeed we'll probably need 5 or 6 replays to even understand.
There's one.
Yeah, which isn't even an assist because then Pastore falls over, no?
But yeah, but that ridiculous pass. I mean, that's one of those things where, you know, it's like the Rodrigo Taddei Aurelio. You're like, what? How do you technically, physically?
So he's
that.
Standing in front. Well, two defenders are standing in front of him. He has the ball, but they're right next to him. And how does he get the ball past them to Pastore?
Well, he looks like he's going to do like a Cruyff turn, I suppose. But he doesn't execute fully the Cruyff turn because what he's about to do is lift the ball over the defender's heads with the inside of his foot.
Rabona, though, one leg comes behind the other after doing a drag back and then side foot lifts it. Just how? It's impossible to understand.
Well, Ilicic, you know, I think if you look at this season, again, he missed the first, I think, 9 or 10 games of the campaign because he had this this bacterial infection. He had in the lymph nodes in his neck. You know, he'd wake up, he had no energy, he was scared for his life. I mean, it does sound a little bit over the top, but he said, having been a teammate of Davide Astori's, having seen everything that happened to him, he was very aware of how kind of precarious, you know, life is, even if you're a professional athlete. And this is the astonishing thing about Atalanta this season, is that from the losing on penalties to Copenhagen in the Europa to get to the Europa League group stages, they went on a terrible run after that. Part of that terrible run was because they were without Ilicic and Zapata was not scoring. And ever since they've been doing their thing, they've been practically unstoppable. But Gasperini said this team has depth all over the park in terms of we've got 2 goalkeepers, we've got 6 centre-backs, we've got 4 wing-backs, we can change things up in midfield. The 3 positions that I absolutely cannot change is Zapata, Ilicic and Papu Gomez. And yeah, that's going to be really interesting to see. I think going forward, I think they'll hold on to Ilicic and Papu, but not Zapata. And that's, I think, maybe been the one thing holding them back over the last few years is holding them back. I mean, they finished 4th and they're probably going to finish 4th again this time around.
Oh, 1 point behind Inter in 3rd.
And that's because Pitania, who, to be fair to him, has had a very good season with Spal, couldn't score goals in the way that Zapata has done.
Well, they've got Genoa at home next up, then the cup final, when there should be a massive crowd going down to... the Stadio Olimpico. It'd be nice for the Stadio Olimpico to get a decent crowd for a game involving Lazio. It was half empty. I mean, not even half empty. It was quarter full, this this weekend.
Did you see
people like crack jokes about how, like, you know, we're not crack jokes, it's definitely serious, but what a freak show it was that they didn't shut down the curva for the racist abuse that Bakayoko's subject to. Like, you know, the joke was that, well, maybe they did and nobody noticed because, you know, right now, the way they are. I just hope nothing. It makes you nervous when Atalanta travel en masse to Rome because, like you said, it's the one thing that unites Lazio and Roma supporters is their loathing for Atalanta.
It's going to be amazing to see them in the Champions League. I am looking forward to seeing
if
what
they qualify for. They're not there yet, okay?
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye on things for these final few weeks. Tell you what, let's just have a little burst of music, perhaps the Papu Gomez song, and then we'll be back with what else happened this weekend because there were some big things. News of a not Atalanta, but actually related to them because it's their beloved neighbours, Brescia. Brescia are back up in Serie A. Welcome back, Massimo Cellino. How many managers this season? Just the two.
David Suazo.
Mm-hmm. Three games.
And then they brought in Eugenio Carini. Il Genio.
Right. I thought, Gab, you were going to get excited about it. I thought you were a big Carini fan.
Cellino coming back.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's our next Galazzo, surely.
Cellino.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Lecce could follow them this coming weekend.
Fabio Liverani's Lecce.
Wow. Yeah. Extraordinary. Anyway, nice for Brescia to get their side back in the top flight. They're a club that contributed many, many happy memories from Pirlo and Baggio to Mazzoni to all sorts of things.
Pep Guardiola.
Guess who was there when their title celebrations were going on, or their promotion celebrations? Mario Balotelli, which,
really?
Of course,
nice.
As someone who is from Brescia and speaks with a very strong Brescia accent. Wouldn't it be great to see him?
Wouldn't it? Turin Derby took place. They moved it after much suggestion it was going to be played on the anniversary of the Superga air disaster. They played it on the Friday. It finished 1-1. And it was nice to see the Juve fans actually putting out a banner saying honour to the fallen of the Superga.
It was also nice to see them take action against one particular idiot who was spotted making the gesture of an aeroplane. They, for once, used the cameras, identified him and have thrown him out.
Every year, right, so the captain of the team goes up and all the guys on the youth team, they all sit around the memorial and the captain reads the names of the people who died. And every year it's us on social media or whatever, and every year it gives you goosebumps.
Right. Well, we did a Golazzo all about this incredible story, an incredible group of people. Napoli are now definitely second in the table. Mathematically, they are now guaranteed.
Arithmetically,
they are... sealed into second place. The race for the top four is oh so tight now, Gab. Inter drawing this weekend. Roma also only managing a draw. Inter drawing 0-0 away at Udinese. Meantime, no word yet on the new contract for Icardi, but he's been told to keep a low profile. How's that going?
Well, he just keeps appearing naked on his knees in... some very provocative photos with Wanda.
Quasi-NSFW photo shoot on Wanda's
right.
They're Instagram.
Kind of apparently inspired by David and Victoria Beckham's risque pictures back in the day. They've been hugely successful. If you haven't seen them, why not join the 27 million people who have got to her Instagram feed?
I haven't had my weekly dig up Spalletti.
Okay.
You know how Wanda was like Jezebel and the devil and Satan rolled into one for making those suggestions about how his teammates could get Mauro the ball more, blah, 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 right?
Uh-huh.
What does the little bald hobgoblin say after the game today? They ask, like, how can you improve your quality in front of goal?
Right.
And he says, have players of better quality there.
Right.
How is this different? It just bugs me that this guy has got a portion of the media eating out of his hands where it's never his fault. It's always somebody else's fault. And he can go and basically dump all over his own players, but nobody else can.
But there is a significant body of opinion that he's
that he
not
should
doing
go?
It. Yeah.
Yes, and I lead that fan club.
But they're going to finish third, maybe, which is an improvement on last year,
this
right?
This is the single most dangerous thing, people bringing up this idea. Oh, look, they're improving. They're third. And and then they had such a wonderful Champions League because people don't remember anything about the Champions League and how turgid they were. Right. Yes, they narrowly went out, but that's because they frankly got very lucky against PSV Eindhoven and against Spurs.
Well, the name that's been linked with that job, as well as the potential vacancy in Rome and also in Paris as well.
No.
You know it. I know it.
I getcha.
It's Antonio Conte.
Yes.
I see you're happy about that.
Delighted.
Okay.
I mean, he's a great manager. He's not a great manager for what these clubs need right now. And the other thing, which is...
Why is that, Gab?
Because...
Claudio Ranieri said he'd go and pick Antonio Conte up at the airport.
Yeah,
because you would make Claudio Ranieri's legacy look good. he's a tremendous manager. And look, we've seen this. He's a guy who's suspicious. He's a guy who's closed. He's a guy who always demanding better players. And he's a guy who is always has tense relationships with the people running the club.
Mm.
Even at Juve, when you had Beppe Marotta babysitting him, remember what happened? 3 years, and then all of a sudden, he walks out. I mean, he walked out of the club, right?
They wouldn't sign him Juan Cuadrado.
Over-signing, because they're not signing him the superstars he wants. Now, Inter are just coming out of financial fair play restrictions, as are Roma. Can you imagine the fans in Rome? Like, the minute they do something, he does something he doesn't want? Again, I don't know. I haven't spoken to Antonio Conte the last couple of months. Maybe he's become monk-like during his time away and says, you know what? I'll come back a better manager because I've learned my lessons. I've learned not to, you know, send text messages telling players never to come back so that the club is forced to sell them, like he did with Diego Costa. But I don't know that you want to take that chance. Then you look at the amount of money he wants. You know, if I were Inter, I would say, okay, listen, Antonio, you want to show us you've changed? Okay, your salary is going to be €1 million. And then if you hit these targets, you get us in the chain. You get us in the round of 16. Here's another $15 million. Go knock yourself out.
Well, but as people who cover Serie A, I mean, the idea of Conte being back is pretty exciting.
Oh, it is exciting.
Conte, Ancelotti, and maybe Allegri all in the same thing.
But the other thing is almost daily, because Conte is very well. Conte doesn't speak to the press much, but he is basically one guy to every paper, who is sort of his conduit, is sort of his spirit animal. And there's a guy, Gazzetta, who does exactly that. And I can also understand Spalletti's annoyance. Not that I'm going to defend Spalletti for a second. Picking up the paper and like, oh, this is what Conte would do next season if he was in charge of Inter. And like, blah, 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 blah. This is what Inter need to do if they want Conte. And after a while, I could see how that would be rather a ball-breaking exercise, especially if somebody as sensitive as Spalletti.
Inter currently are in third. Roma need a blistering finish to this campaign if they're to break back into the top four. And next weekend, they're facing Juventus.
Yeah, and to be honest, at this time of the year, whenever they played them, because Juventus have either got Champions League finals to look forward right. to, or cup finals, or they've already wrapped up the league, they tend to do pretty well in this game. So we'll see. But as Gab says, with Cristiano chasing that Capocannoniere crown, and he's got a lot of work
against
to do.
Against that Roma defence. Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, the one other thing we should mention before we wrap up today is the fantastic match at the Tardini. Parma taking on Sampdoria. Confusingly, in each other's strips for charity, they wore jerseys bearing the design of their opponents, but in their own team colours. So Parma basically were wearing the kind of
hoop,
but in Parma colours, and Samp had the cross, but in, yeah, you get the picture. Two goals from Quagliarella, a 3-3 draw was the final score. Parma 6 points clear now of the drop, so looks like mission accomplished in terms of their first season back in the top flight.
Yeah, and Quagliarella is on, what, 25 goals now?
Yeah,
which is the most by a player that age in Serie A history. We all know that Luca Toni was the oldest Capocannoniere, but he did not score as many as Quagliarella did.
When he was 36, he scored them when he was older?
No,
is that how you're shoehorning him in?
No, Gap. What I'm saying is that I think he scored 22 goals.
Right, he was top scorer, but it wasn't this many goals. But
yeah,
that season it was enough. To
Quagliarella had also 8 penalties for Quagliarella.
Sure, yeah. One of them this weekend.
It's like Milivojevic this year has got 12 goals.
Yeah, only Milivojevic has scored more in Europe Top 5 leagues.
Fair enough. All right, then. Well, that wraps it up, then, for today's edition of Golazzo. We're not going to be here for the next couple of weeks.
We're going to come back to review something.
Yeah, we're not going to be here for the next couple of weeks, but once the season is settled, we'll come back and do a proper review of it all. So hang on for that.
James, you're in Slovakia.
I'm going
right?
to be in Slovakia for the IIHF World Ice Hockey Championships. That's right. Italy going to be there.
Of course.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Gab and James. We'll be back soon, listener. Until then, from all of us here, arrivederci. Campionato di calcio italiano.
You've been listening to Galazzo, the totally Italian football show. It's a Muddy Knees Media production, and for sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Check out our other football shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audioboom, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.